This is a Mexican Crossing Lines with Cindy Gomez-Shemp.
And Duke Gomez-Shemp.
You're listening to 88.1 FM KPPPLP, Fargo-Moorhead, where we are adding local color to your airwaves. And tonight, we have a very special RevolutionTruth.org update. Revolution Truth has been on our show before. We've shared with you an interview with Tangerine Bolin. And this organization, if you go back and watch that interview that we've done already, tells you about the standing that people have in a lawsuit that they are taking on for environmental justice for people at Standing Rock. And so I'm going to bring on today two very special guests. One of them is Rebecca Blackwell. She is a New Mexican, and she's also a former professor of English, currently volunteering as director of operations for Revolution Truth. She's also dedicated to the environment, to our Mother Earth, to the sustenance of life, to continuing the sustenance of life. And she works to empower people who believe in the voices of the marginalized. That's right in line with what we do here at KPPPLP. I'm very honored to have her on the show. To tell you just a little bit more about her, she also has a Master of Arts in Teaching Composition and Technical Writing and a BS in Psychology, Philosophy, and Religious Studies. Thank you for being on my show today, Rebecca. I'm so honored to have you with us.
Oh, Cindy, I am so honored to be here. Thank you for having me. I love your show so much because this is what we need from the media. We need investigative, in-depth reporting. And in a world of sound bites and some fake news and some real news and that kind of thing, this is an opportunity for us to sit down for a while and really explore an issue in depth. And tonight I'm hoping to bring to the public a truth that has needed to be told for quite some time. I will be talking about our case in greater depth, but I also want to explore this icky thing around the Bismarck reroute. I think all of us have known that there was something fishy about that. And the story in the media that has been told and recycled has never gotten down to the truth. And so one of the things I'd like to do tonight is drill down to that truth of the Bismarck reroute, because it's on that where we find the foundation for this environmental injustice and racial discrimination case. So and I'd like to talk about that, and I'm looking forward to sharing some details about the real safety concerns of this pipeline.
And that's why Revolution Truth is here. That's why we have Revolution Truth in the house, because that's the kind of power we need right now. This is exactly what we need. We need to be looking at this pipeline and what this company is doing to the people, to the land, to the environment. That's what we're going to talk about today. But first, before I have a chance to break all of that down with you, Rebecca, I want to introduce you to one of the plaintiffs in this case, because I want you to understand what the stakes are. And you may have heard of this plaintiff. You might recognize him from our previous broadcasts. His name is Russell Vasquez. He is the grandson of Mary Trujillo, the same young man that you have been hearing from for weeks now, sharing his story with you about his struggle to try to reunite his family. This issue goes real deep, really, really deep. But before I get to that, I just want to share with everybody who is listening right now, we are doing a special broadcast on updates from revolutiontruth.org. Go check them out. Find out more about what this organization has done, can do, will do, and what they're bringing to the table to help the people of Standing Rock. I want you guys to check out our social media pages and look for all of this story, the story that we've been bringing to you about what's been happening, not just to this family, but to the people of Standing Rock. You can go to kpppfm.com. We're broadcasting online, so you can go and listen live by going to kpppfm.com and going to the Listen Live link.
That's right. Updates on Standing Rock is also where we have our podcasts. When we're broadcasting, you can listen live and see what we have on the shows.
And how can folks get a hold of us? Because I have to say, if it were not for our listeners and our viewers, the tips, the comments, and the information that we get from all of you out there, we could not do the work that we do. This is a community radio station.
Definitely.
We are non-commercial, non-profit, and we're here to do media justice work. That's why we created this radio station, for media justice work. And that's why I'm so honored to have revolutiontruth.org, which in the same vein of social justice work, goes out there to challenge these issues.
Definitely.
Of social justice.
Definitely. You have to get a hold of us. Give us your tips. Give us your input. You can do it many ways. One way is we have a call-in line that you can leave about a three-minute message on. The number is 701-566-0917. Again, that number is 701-566-0917. Leave a message. Tell us who you are. Tell us if we can air what you said. If you want to keep it confidential, please let us know. You can also tweet us at @media_PPP. You can email Cindy at kpppfm.com or me, Duke at kpppfm.com. Follow us on Facebook at 88.1 FM Fargo Moorhead, the People's Press Project in Mexi-Can.
Yes, and I do encourage folks to do that because that is one of the best ways that you can get a hold of us, and we will try to get back to you as soon as possible. So, with no further ado, I will bring on Russell Vasquez. Thank you for being with us, Russell. I wanted to thank you for sharing your story with us as a station about what's happening to your family. But in the context of this lawsuit, of this environmental justice lawsuit, I wanted you to tell us first and foremost, as you introduce yourself to our audience again, because this is kind of a new introduction. Who is Russell Vasquez? Where do you come from?
Well, thank you, Cindy, for having me again. It's been it's been a crazy time since we all started this movement and where we've ended up today. But ideally, a little bit about myself. My name is Russell Vasquez. My family originally is from South Dakota. My tribe is Lakota Sioux, specifically Oglala. And I am a tribal member of the Pine Ridge Reservation, as well as countless other family members. And ideally, mainly I got into this because I wanted to protect the water, to protect the people that it'll ultimately affect. It's already affected so many before it's even been fully operational, and it will only continue to affect people, especially my direct family. And, my family, we have a big heritage of, warriors, and we come from a strong bloodline of ancestors who fought and died and sacrificed so much to ensure that even our very name would echo through the histories. And, I come from a long line like Crazy Horse. I'm specifically, we're Crazy Horse's sister's descendants. And through that heritage, my grandmother, she is a descendant of a wounded knee survivor, a young girl with a bunch of other little girls and children ran into a ditch while the Wounded Knee Massacre was happening. And, you know, the Wounded Knee Massacre site is right down the road from Pine Ridge. And, you know, it's a lot of historical things have happened on these lands that, as well as Standing Rock, Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe, all these lands, they belong to the Great Sioux Nation. And when they chose to reroute this pipeline, they are directly going to affect the water routes that run to the aquifers that basically everyone drinks from, uses from, showers from. And it will be, you know, a terrible disaster for 20 million people, multiple states. And it's always now because of this when the pipe ruptures. And it's very upsetting, you know, because our people have constantly been through oppression after oppression, stonewalled left and right. We barely got our rights in the 70s. We weren't even allowed to pray. And, you know, to always have an uphill battle and constantly in the reservation, the life is hard. Poverty scales are immense. And, you know, and then to have to come across a corporation who wants to dig in your backyard and doesn't care about the people or the animals, the lands, how even pulling oil from the ground itself affects the world, you know, and them completely blatantly just shutting it all out and saying, no, we care more about the dollar. Is, you know, it's, and that's why I've continued to battle and continue to strive forward to make sure this does not happen. And now that we are with Revolution Truth, we have been presented an immense opportunity and a task that will not only help future generations, but current generations that are being affected by this. So I really am thankful for Revolutionary Truth or RevolutionTruth.org. And, you know, I mean, it's a great team, and they have very skilled and knowledgeable individuals who are willing to go the distance, willing to get the facts you need to show that this is, in fact, the worst thing they could do. And, you know, I feel blessed. And thank you, Rebecca, for, you know, helping me. And I like to thank Tangerine and countless others that are part of the team, you know, and it's only growing. You know, that's why we're here.
Yes, definitely. It is why we're all here. And I liked your little faux pas about revolutionary truth. Mm-hmm. Truth shouldn't be revolutionary, but we live in a time where it is. And for Indigenous people, that has always been so. And it's interesting because, you know, you've been on my show a lot, Russell. And you've had to talk about the struggles that you've encountered with the situation you are dealing with right now with your mother being in jail, grandmother being in a hospital. But this is a generational struggle. This is something in your DNA. This is something you are deeply, your grandmother, your mother, are deeply connected to. This stand at Standing Rock means something completely different to you and to your family than it does to the majority of people around the country looking in on this news story. And I wanted you to talk a little bit about how this has affected you. I know many of the audience members out there probably have already heard parts of your story, but haven't really understood all of the ways in which you are involved and affected by this struggle for clean water. I mean, yeah, of course, you're going to stand up alongside of other people that want clean water, but this is so much more to you than that. Can you give us some perspective?
Yeah, you know, first and foremost, what happened to me as far as the biggest tragedy that came from the pipeline's existence and the need to have a call out, answer a calling that we all got inside, you know. You know, I mean, it was, even for non-Indigenous people, it was, and then when this all first started, you know, we were all tuning in slowly and it started growing, but then you started feeling this internal calling saying, please come stand alongside Mother Earth to defend her in this time of precedence. And, you know, when we answered the call, many family members, many people all over came, you know, it was a beautiful thing. And, you know, it was the biggest gathering of Indigenous people and the tribes since the Battle of Little Bighorn. And for that to occur in such a necessary time when we're constantly at war with corporations and greed and, you know, fossil fueling, knowing well that global warming is a fact. And when we answered that call, we showed up, and from that, you know, many people ended up getting thrown in jail, injured, you know, things that they will suffer with the rest of their lives. And in my case, they came from my family. They took my grandmother from me and my mother, and they eventually arrested my mother, all off of false allegations and lies. But not only they created, but they needed to use to smear the camp. They preyed upon innocent individuals that I love and would die for the sake of their agenda. And every day I suffer. Every day I'm dealing with something new and some different strategy they have, because they rely on the fact that they don't want you to know anything, and they hope that you know nothing. Dumbing down society has been a thing that has been going on, and you know, as far as the big picture, but when you look down at the smaller picture and you come to North Dakota and you see how they're operating, you see what they're willing to do and how far they're willing to go, you're really just seeing a reflection of what's to come if they win. You know, and when they took my family from me, and well, with no proof, nothing, they took them all off of basic lies and deception. They created a story, and they took them without any proof, and they have witnesses. We were there. I was there. For them not only to just come after us as water protectors who are standing up for the right for clean water, but they are now trying to incriminate with false stories. You know, they came to my family. They were fine. You know, they were there. They were, you know, giving back to the land. They were experiencing a cultural significance. And they, everyone felt good about it. Everyone was there in prayer and in power, and it was, people were constantly taking care of other people. And then for them to create this story where my grandmother was, you know, abused and left alone in a cold, dark tent, and we worked so hard to make sure she was comfortable, fed. For them to turn around and all the years my mom sacrificed to make sure my grandmother was taken care of, to make sure she wasn't put in a home, that she had close family members there caring for her to the bitter end. She made a promise to my grandmother to be by her side and not put her in a home before she got dementia. You know, and my grandmother loves her culture. She always loves going to South Dakota. And here we are presented with an opportunity where they were given a chance to be around it, and the worst thing could have happened. And now, you know, and then countless others suffer from these very similar things. False planting of weapons, just being there in general, you're being incriminated, thrown in jail. It's a terrible thing, but, you know, out of the darkness comes the light. And right now, we're in a critical time where the light is so dwindling, but it's there. And through that little crack, we are getting necessary connections. We are making strong allies, and we are proving that we will not back down. We will not give up. We will not give in. Even if there are those who will, there are those who will not, and we are powerful enough to cover the rest. And right now, you're talking to a team of them. Again, I'm thankful that I was given this opportunity to step forward with such a great team to really show the injustice as far as big picture and little picture. And that is a blessing in itself. And, you know, and I thank every day the Creator, you know, to Godzilla, that these things are coming in my life. I get new problems. I will get solutions.
We can come up with these solutions together, I believe. And we know that there have been a lot of water protectors, nearly 1,000 of them now, that have been drug under the wheels of this mechanism that is going to push forward, shove down the throats of millions of people a pipeline that will, by all accounts, inevitably leak and destroy the water supply for 20 million people. And that's not even taking into account the damage that could be done to the Oglala Aquifer, which lies underneath the largest aquifer in the United States. And this isn't just about you and your present, Russell. I mean, you, your family, you personally, the land base that you stand to inherit, the places where you have lived, the places where your grandmother has lived, your family has lived, where you've been raised, for future generations. These places are in jeopardy. That is part of what you're protecting, is it not?
That is exactly what I'm protecting. And not even just the lands that I inherit, the lands of all, the people I don't know, the families that will be affected, the children, the list goes on for how many people that will be affected by this. Like you said, it is it's the largest aquifer in the nation. And for them to be willing to sacrifice that shows a lot of what they're willing to do. And you know, my family, they have lived on these lands for, you know, centuries. And we sit here, you know, and we, you know, if you go up there, you feel an energy, an unknown feeling that it's just beautiful. It's spiritual, it's sacred, and you're walking on the lands of your ancestors, the people who fought and died for unity, clean Mother Earth. You know, they had the right way of living, and it was all set against them. And, you know, when you know all this history and you know that they've kept all of it out of the history books and they didn't want anyone to know how bad they treated us, and you sit here and you see that they're doing it again. They're constantly doing it. This isn't the first pipeline, but it can be the last if we win. And it's, you know, a lot of ceremonies, a lot of things occur on these lands, sacred things. You know, Humblechas, Vision Quest, Sundance. You know, these are sacred ceremonies that are meant for the people. They sacrifice their own bodies to ultimately protect the people, to make sure that the future brings food and warmth and blessings. And, you know, it's always about the people. in our culture, and it's always been like that. And you go on the reservation and you see that it's about the people and the family, and you know, a lot of people, you know, they don't see that because not many people end up on the reservations or see the culture, and they're just learning about it. But you know, out there in the shadows, we are very alive and well and praying and, you know, living, trying to live the old ways. And if they build this pipeline and when it does leak, that's all gone. It will affect those lands. It will change everything. All that history, all that beautiful knowledge will go into sludge, a barren wasteland.
And you know what? We can't allow that to happen. We cannot allow that to happen. And it's difficult at this time, specifically in this battle, because we have a Trump administration that is rushing full bore to approve this pipeline being completed. So we were essentially sold a bill of goods. We were told that this pipeline was going to be routed through Bismarck, but the people there didn't want it, so they gave it, and they put it on this tribal land, and that the easement was not granted by the Army Corps of Engineers in December. Between the 4th and the 7th, we were notified this would not happen. We were all supposed to celebrate and go home, because the Army Corps of Engineers did not want this pipeline to go through. Obviously, they did not grant the easement. Therefore, they didn't want it to go through. Even the tribal leadership told us that the next fight was in the courtrooms. We should go home. But the truth is, there are a lot of battlefronts. Defunding. The Water Protector Legal Collective continues to fight for the rights of the people that are out there, have been arrested in water protection actions, etc. But Revolution Truth is doing something different. They're bringing in a new strategy, a welcome strategy, an important strategy. They're calling out the environmental racism of what this is doing to this tribe. What made you connect with this group, Russell? Well, how did you seize this opportunity?
Well, you know, in the midst of everything that was going on, through connections I had made and the great team we've been dealing with on our own personal front, they basically introduced us, said that they needed plaintiffs that matches, you know, they needed people of the lands to come forward. And I said, of course, you know, that's why I showed up to Standing Rock in the first place. Because my lands were going to be affected. My family, countless others. I mean, you know, like I said, it was an internal calling. You know, Mother Earth was calling for us to come help her. And we came the best way we could. We gathered, we protested, we stood in the way. And, you know, countless times we were stonewalled, injured, tried to get thrown into the darkness in a way. And so, you know, now we're presented with an opportunity where we can come at them from a legal standpoint, you know, from their battles. You know, we're fighting it their way now. We have the great team that I've been introduced to and been blessed to come to me, you know, and I believe that it was meant to be, because these things, you know, everything matters, every connection you make and every decision you make. And when I was presented this opportunity, I just knew. It was the calling. It was what I can do for the people. How I can give myself in hopes that we take it all down, not just the Dakota Access Pipeline, but it'll set a precedent for future cases. And I, you know, I'm thankful every day that I was presented this opportunity, you know, with these great people that we come, you know, Rebecca Blackwell and Tangerine and countless others, and we just have meaningful conversations, and to be with a team of such kind-hearted people who are doing this off their own time. They're not being paid. They're not, you know, there's the only reward is clean water, is civil justice, to see that the voices of the people are heard, and there's no greater reward. And I'm just so blessed, again, to have such a great team and to be a part of this, and to just have the different things that I had to go through to meet these people was, you know, it was a long road, and, you know, the road isn't over, but I am so thankful that I met them along that path, and now we're able to do something that is very, very tactical, very strategic, you know, coming at them properly, and it's godsend, if you want to call it that way.
I will call it that way. I agree with you. And for those of you who are just joining us right now, you're listening to Mexican Crossing Lines, the voice of the gentleman that you've been hearing on the radio is Russell Vasquez, a frequent host, co-host, guest on our show in the recent investigation of the case of his mother, Kathleen Bennett. But who is today a guest representing plaintiffs in a case that is being headed by revolutiontruth.org. And I want you guys to know that this organization has been on our show before. We've talked about their work. I want you to go check them out, revolutiontruth.org. Maybe, Duke, you can throw up their contact information and such on the page so that people know how to get a hold of them.
All right.
Because if you think you have standing to be part of this case, and we'll have Rebecca on here in a minute to talk about that, I want you to know how you can get a hold of them. Mm-hmm. I want you to know how you can join this fight. It's one of the many ways that we are fighting the black snake. You're listening to 88.1 FM KPPPLP Fargo-Moorhead, where we are adding local color to your airwaves. We're also broadcasting online, so you can go to kppfm.com and click on the Listen Live link. Listen to our broadcasts every day, Monday through Friday, and sometimes even on the weekends.
That's right.
And as always, we want to hear from you guys. So if you have comments, questions, tips, you can call us at 701-566-0917. That's a message line. You can also tweet us at @media_PPP. You can follow us on Facebook at 88.1 FM Fargo-Moorhead, the People's Press Project, and Mexi-Can. Mm-hmm. And I want to thank Russell for being here, for sharing his fight, his stand. This is one of the many ways that water protectors are standing in the gap, fighting for the rights of all of us. And before you go, Russell, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for being there to protect the water for me, for my family, for all of the people that live in my community, for putting yourself in harm's way to your mother and to your grandmother, for everything that you have had to sacrifice and everything that you have had to suffer as you have tried to protect the rights of all of us to a clean environment and to clean water. Thank you so much, Russell, to you and your family.
Thank you. Thank you to you as well. And thank you, Rebecca. And thank you to everyone out there listening. And there is hope. We will win, and I am glad that there is another outlet we can take it by storm. And I'm glad that, you know, that we have the most important thing on our side, and that's the Great Spirit, Mother Earth herself. We are fighting for her, and there is no greater ally. So know right now that everyone listening and everyone who does listen, that we will not give up. And we need your help. We need everyone involved that you can. I mean, if you think you can't help, you're wrong. There are many ways to help. So please, reach out to these kind folks that I'm working with. You know, reach out to me. There's always there's always something you can do. You know, if you feel like you're in life and you don't know what you're doing, you feel like you're working a job that doesn't make sense and you're just going through the motions, leave it. Join us. This fight is greater than any paycheck. This fight is for a future of our kids. Our kids' kids, everything matters right now, and this is the way. So again, thank you for everyone for having me. Thank you, Cindy. It's always a pleasure. And again, you know, you can make a difference. Everyone can.
Thanks, Russell, for doing that for us. And next I'm going to have on Rebecca Blackwell from revolutiontruth.org. I have to say, I very much admire the work of this organization. These are the superheroes in my movie. These are the people that come out at just the right moment and show us a different avenue that we can fight on. And there's a lot of different ways that we need to try to attack this black snake and all extractive industries. We have a lot of things to fight for, especially in a Trump administration. So I am thankful for revolutiontruth.org. I'm thankful for having you on this program. I wanted to start off by asking you, how did you get into this struggle? How did you come to Revolution Truth?
Great question, Cindy. Well, I woke up the Saturday after the election, sort of a changed woman in some ways. It was about, 5:30 in the morning. And I woke up wide awake with this mandate in my heart, in my head, that said, okay, it's time to step up, and you will do this now. And that day I got on Facebook, and I started making posts, these sort of one-liner posts that were just coming from outside of me. And the first post that I wrote on there was, "All pipelines leak." And that's something I had never said before to myself. It's not something I even knew at the time. In fact, I didn't even have confirmation of this until about a week and a half ago. But it was one of those moments that started this cascading event, a series of events. And I've known Tangerine on Facebook for, I think, since 2011. And so we've been Facebook friends. And she issued a call to her whole friends list back this last fall and said, the Army Corps is going to try to forcibly evict the water protectors. And we're going, if they do this, we're going to file an emergency injunction to keep them from doing this because the encampment is an act of free speech. Who can come help? So a handful of us said, I'll help. What do you need? And we formed this team. We started an archive where we have about 350 people who have been posting every bit of information they can find on Standing Rock. And our team initially started by putting all of these links with little summaries into a document so that we would have the evidence to take to court in the event that we were going to need to file this injunction. And that need was mitigated because the Army Corps said, oh, we're not going to do that. And I think that was due to all of the public pressure. They knew that if they had done that, it would not have gone over well. Obviously, 20,000 people showed up. The public was very focused on Standing Rock at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And so even though the need for that was mitigated, we decided to stay in it. And so we started working behind the scenes with various legal teams on the ground, and we've been helping very quietly this whole time. And we've been wanting to bring this case since the beginning. And it's like Russell said, the timing is the thing. It's the most important thing. And so we would get close to something, and then circumstances would prevent us. And then we'd get close to something else, and circumstances would prevent us. And that happened several times. And so here we are now. And where we are right now is that all of the other suits, as far as I'm aware, have failed. And it's entirely likely, although I'm not entirely certain, because I don't know what all the different lawyers out there are doing, but it's really looking right now like we're the last group between Standing Rock and that oil flowing down that pipeline. And so I'm very thankful
pressure
for
there.
How this worked out. Because had we tried to go with this earlier, I don't know how that would have worked out given the recent developments.
Mm-hmm.
With Trump coming in, issuing that memo, and the Army Corps prematurely, you know, they weren't supposed to announce until February 20th. Public comment period was supposed to be open until February 20th.
Right.
There were all kinds of things that they rushed through this because Trump said, rush through this. And it set the stage for us to do what we're doing now. And what we're doing now is going back to the beginning. It's come full circle. The wheel turns. And so we are focusing on this 2014 Bismarck reroute and what happened around all that, because there's some really strange inconsistencies there.
So what we know about that, I mean, everybody's been told about, we all know about that. We were told that the Bismarck people, who are 90% white, did not want it there. There was consultation with them. There was consultation with the people in the city administration. They did not want it there. There was concerns about the safety. So they rerouted it down to Standing Rock. Is that not the story that we've all heard? Because that's what I've heard.
That was the story I believe that we all heard. Yes, Cindy.
It's been repeated to us in the media over and over and over again. This is what we've been told.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the truth? Mm-hmm. What's the revolution truth?
Well, does Duke have that PDF I sent him? Can
yes.
we put that map up?
The map is up. Got it.
The first page
yep.
of that PDF. Does it work?
Perfect.
It works.
Fantastic. Thank you, Duke. So I hope your viewers can see this. I'm not watching the live stream because I think watching the comments would really sort of freak me out.
Yeah.
So looking at the looking at this map, do you see these lines on this map? Mm-hmm. There's a red line, and then there's this yellow line up that runs down, like, sort of to the north. Mm-hmm. Can you guys see that very well on your screen? Okay. So that yellow line was the original route that DAPL proposed. That's where they were going to run it. And on May 29th of 2014, according to the North Dakota Public Service Commission permit, which was the permitting agency that said, okay, yeah, we're going to approve this route through the state. Down there in that little map key on the left-hand side, it says proposed route 529-2014. And then we have a second proposed route, and then a red line, which is the third proposed route. Okay, so what's missing in this permit is an explanation for why that yellow line was changed. So hang tight with me, guys. We're going to walk through this. It's going to take a little bit of time.
I know. I was going to say, like, what do you mean? You, a missing explanation.
Okay.
Please do tell.
Yes. So we're going to fast forward for just a second to 2016, October.
Okay.
27th of 2016. So Jesse Jackson goes out to Standing Rock, and he says, this is the ripest case of environmental racism we've seen in a long, long time.
Remember that?
And everybody in the media catches on to this and starts accusing a predominantly white Bismarck of being racist and saying, oh, no, you know, we're not going to have that pipeline here because it's not safe. So the chairwoman of the Public Service Commission came out and said, we're not a bunch of racists. That's not what happened. This route was never included in the permit.
Wow.
We never even vetted this route.
What?
So we can look at this map, which I pulled from page 22 of the permit, and see that, yes, indeed, the route line was included in the permit. Now, these other two proposed changes, there's one that's a change around Williston and one that's a change around Watford. Those two routes, and they were minor, minor changes. One was like 2 miles and the other one was 6.5, I think, of a change. Those were explained. And when I looked at that permit, I thought, now, why on earth did they not explain the Bismarck reroute? Because that's a major change, right?
Yeah.
So we've got our first inconsistency. And the reasons
I have to
for
just
these
pause.
Reroutes
I have to pause.
Western,
I just have
which
to pause.
Is also predominantly white. Oh, yes, please pause.
I just wanted to pause and say, so what you're saying is there was a reroute. But there's no explanation for this one, even though there is explanation for the other ones.
Correct.
Continue. Okay.
It is not in the permit. Okay. So Williston was concerned about future municipal growth. Williston is one of these towns that's experiencing a population boom because of the Bakken oil fields.
Mm-hmm.
So they want to build a new airport. You know, can't blame them for that. So Dakota Access consulted with Williston, and Dakota Access moved the route 6.5 miles. Then they consulted with Watford, another town that's booming because of the oil industry. And they said, well, we need you to bump this over a couple of miles because we're going to put a highway bypass around our city. So Dakota Access said, okay, sure. So Williston and Watford were both consulted, which is great. That should happen. Now, there's this claim floating around in the media that Bismarck was consulted too.
Oh, yeah, that's been the thing.
And this is not the case.
What?
But this is not true, according to the mayor of Bismarck. This is not true.
So what did the mayor of Bismarck say?
Let me pull up the quote. Here we go. I have like 15 documents open on my computer right now. Bear with me.
That's fine.
Okay. Mr. Mike Seminary, the mayor of Bismarck, said in November, when in this really emphatic and impassioned plea to get the protectors to go home, and in response to these accusations of racism, this is what he said. Quote, Bismarck has never been involved in that discussion. Not one policymaker, not one department head, not one city employee has ever been involved in a discussion with regards to a route north of Bismarck.
What? They've been making such a big deal out of the fact that Bismarck rejected it.
Which I imagine is why the mayor said that.
Which begs the question, who in fact rejected that route? Is there any evidence that anyone in Bismarck actually rejected that route?
Well, here's another jewel. Julie Fedorchak, I think that's how you say her last name. If not,
yeah.
I apologize.
Mm-hmm.
Who is the chairwoman of the North Dakota Public Service Commission.
Okay.
Who said that the route was never included. She also said that the Army Corps had rejected the route prior to submitting the application.
What? Hold on. The Army Corps of Engineers rejected the route prior to the submission of the application.
Correct. And she said this in a press release that their office issued on October 27th in response to public outcry about the Public Service Commission being racist for not vetting or looking at the Bismarck route as a viable alternative.
Mm-hmm.
So her quote, the river crossing north of Bismarck was a proposed alternative considered by the company early in the routing process. This route was never included in the proposed route submitted to the PSC and therefore was never vetted or considered by us during our permitting process. Further, it had been eliminated by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers during their environmental assessment.
What?
The final permitted route follows an existing pipeline corridor that has been previously disturbed. And the pipeline corridor she's talking about is the 1980 Northern Border Pipeline, which is a natural gas line, and we'll talk about that in a minute. So she says the Army Corps, it was eliminated by the Army Corps during their environmental assessment, which then suggests that the environmental assessment was conducted prior to May 29th.
Obviously.
If the route was rejected.
Obviously.
Before that date.
So I'm sorry. I'm just like trying to wrap my head around this because we've been told this over and over again. That the Bismarck route, I mean, haven't we all heard this?
Mm-hmm.
Am I crazy?
We've heard this. lots.
Over and over again. They rejected the route, blah, blah, blah. it doesn't look like there was a chance to reject anything because no one was consulted about it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not hearing that there's any evidence of consultation. Well, that doesn't sound too far off from what we've heard so far.
Yeah.
So explain to me about this other gas line.
Oh, okay. So there's a natural gas line that they call it co-location that runs along this Lake Oahe route. And that pipeline was finished in 1982. Put into service, I should say, in 1982.
Okay.
And the rationale for co-locating DAPL with this other pipeline was, and we've heard this repeated in numerous places, including the environmental assessment and the statement from the Public Service Commission and in the permit to the Public Service Commission, that they wanted to co-locate the line so that they could avoid they could run along previously disturbed routes. So I believe they did that because an environmental assessment isn't as rigorous of an environmental review as an environmental impact statement is. So the thresholds for burden of proof for an EA are lower.
Environmental assessment.
Correct. And yet they still, I'm not entirely clear on this, but I'm assuming based on this emphasis that an environmental assessment still has to pay heed to some of the things that we would look at in terms of historic preservation and environmental protection.
One would think.
And running through contested treaty lands.
Mm.
I think they knew they'd have a problem.
Yes, I think you would. Wow.
And this was a big part of why, you know, what all the big lawsuit that the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe and the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe filed against the Army Corps in pushing them to do an EIS, because the standards for an EIS are so much higher. So that's when they have to comply with the National Historic Preservation Act, NEPA, all I believe that stands for the National Environmental Protection Act.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's correct.
And so, you know, this whole thing has been fraught with that.
Understandably,
it's people have been really upset about that. There's been ancestral sacred sites that have been disrupted, that have been destroyed, and burial sites that have been destroyed by this pipeline. I mean, the environmental impacts, when people think about that, they might just think about pollution, you know, but there's so much more to this that doesn't necessarily get discussed and understood as part of the environmental impact.
Right. So here's the kicker with the co-location. So, in 1980, the standards for pipeline routes weren't as stringent. And so back then, they didn't have to do those surveys like they have to do them now.
Mm.
So, there's been this massive emphasis placed on the co-location, because there's a presupposition there,
right,
that the land was already surveyed.
Right.
But it wasn't until well over a decade later when they started surveying for these kinds of impacts.
It's like they're grandfathering in so, environmental racism. I mean, I'm sorry to put it that way, but it just feels like that. Which that's what you're saying. That's my opinion, everyone. I'll let you continue, Rebecca.
That's certainly one interpretation of it.
You're listening to 88.1 FM KPPPLP, Fargo-Moorhead, where we are adding local color to your airwaves. Ah, okay. You're kind of blowing my mind. I'm sorry. I'm trying to understand all of this.
Right. Okay. So now we're getting closer to building the rationale for our case, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is everybody getting that?
Mm-hmm. Okay. We're with you.
So, all right. So there was so much emphasis placed on this co-location that Dakota Access did not even look at any other route alternatives. We have spoken with a third-party engineer who came in and did a review on it. You know, he was working with some other people. He's a really great guy. I had the opportunity to speak with him a couple of weeks ago. And he's a pipeline expert and an engineer. And he came up with a third route alternative that wouldn't have crossed any water bodies, that would have been shorter, it would have saved the company money, and it wouldn't have created any of the problems that we're seeing here. And it was something that never crossed Dakota Access's mind, apparently.
That's really infuriating.
So, yeah.
So
he did a three-route comparison, the Bismarck route, the current route, and this alternate proposed route.
Yeah.
And of the three, using all the same indicators that one would use in an environmental assessment,
mm-hmm.
he concluded that the Lake Oahe crossing is by far the most dangerous alternative of the three.
Wow. And they were notified of that. The company knew that.
I don't know if the company knew that because we don't have access to the early assessment documents. They are not releasing them to the public. No one can get their hands on the DAPL route comparison. The tribes have asked for it, and they have refused to release them.
Well, it's interesting the information they want to keep us in the dark about, isn't it? Isn't it very interesting what they do not want you to hear, what they do not want you to know? But you know what? That's what we do here all day, every day, 88.1 FM Fargo-Moorhead. We bring you the truth. And tonight, we're bringing you Revolution Truth and Rebecca Blackwell. And the fine people of Revolution Truth, which we've had on before, including Tangerine Bolin, and what they're doing to kill this black snake. Look at the power of truth and what these folks have been able to uncover. We haven't even been told about this before. I want to know from you, Rebecca, because I know that my listeners and my audience, we go down the rabbit holes together. We research, we study. We're not just jumping into a conversation without information. We want to know the truth. So what can we look forward to in the future from the work of your organization moving forward to expose what is happening in this case and how can people get connected to it if they want to help? Whether it be a plaintiff that may have standing or a person that wants to contribute to this fight, how can they get connected?
Okay. I'm going to bookend my answer. First, I'm going to say what people can do to help out right now.
Okay.
Then I will address the first part of your question, which is, where are we going? What are our next steps with the suit?
Yes.
Okay, so for everybody listening here, there are some things that we could really use some help with. We are an all-volunteer team. I want to mention a couple of names here. Mary Vandenberg Green has been on our research team, and she's the one who was able to locate a lot of these documents for me as I was putting this together. And so I want to just issue a shout out and a huge, huge thank you to Mary. I have a nickname for her. I call her Eagle Eyes because she's just got this knack for finding stuff. It's kind of extraordinary. And I also want to thank Sarah McGovern, who also has this really intuitive ability to see things that other people just don't see. She's really got a nose for sniffing out contradictions, and she's wholeheartedly dedicated to finding the truth and providing hope to people. So they were very much a part of this research endeavor in collecting the information for me so I could go in and analyze it. So we have these volunteers, and last week, the news, or just a couple of days ago, actually, it feels like a year ago, just a couple of days ago, you know, this hit social media that we were doing this, and it's starting to go viral right now, but we need it to go more viral. Kevin Gilbert has done a couple of, he did an update last night and then a story the night before that. And so
if Kevin,
people could share out, he loved you too. He talked about you last night.
Great man.
So if people could share this out, if they could share out some of Kevin's stuff that he's covered this last week on us.
Yes, please.
That first initial story got like 30,000 shares already, or views. And as a result of that, people are like flooding in, and that's marvelous. So people came over to my Facebook page and saw all these posts that we had there. We had an interview with Jordan Sheridan. We had some other stuff. And it suddenly there were like all these shares off my page within the first hour of his podcast.
Awesome.
So that's one of the things people can do for us that
share,
takes
share,
a little
share.
Bit of energy and effort. And that would help us a lot. Okay, so that's number one. Number two, we have a GoFundMe. And we have to, this is a huge case. This is a really expensive case. It's very difficult in the courts, and this will be a federal suit. So it's very difficult at the federal level to prove A, environmental injustice, and B, racial discrimination. So we have to have a really high level legal team and high level expert witnesses. We have to be able to pay for Russell and our other plaintiffs to make appearances in court. So we're going to fly them out there. We're going to cover their travel expenses. We have advocacy costs. We have court filing costs. Not one of us is getting paid. Tangerine's not even getting paid. So,
you know what that means,
you know,
to me?
Collectively,
that means
we've
to
put
me
in like
that,
over 1,000 man hours, and none of us are earning a penny.
But you know what that means to me? It means to me that you're here, you're showing up for the water, and you're showing up for the people. And I thank you for that.
Yeah.
And I thank Tangerine for that. And I thank Sarah for that and your whole crew and RevolutionTruth.org. not just for this work that you've done, but the work that you've done in the past. I encourage you folks to go check out what this organization does, what they bring to the table. This is a powerhouse. We have an opportunity, all of us together. By the way, we have more plaintiffs for you. There are other people that have contacted
Marvelous.
Us. There's other people that have already contacted us. We have plaintiffs
okay,
for
so
you,
that
Rebecca.
Brings me, that's wonderful. That is fabulous. Thank you for coming. Thank you for the courage. Thank you so much. This is the third thing that people can do for us. If you are a registered tribal member who lives, or well, there are a couple of criteria here, but if you're on an affected tribe, so downriver of the Lake Oahe Crossing,
mm-hmm.
and if you live there, or you own land there, and or you stand to inherit land. So let's say you live someplace else and your mom has land there and the land is in mom's will.
Mm-hmm.
That would qualify you as a plaintiff.
Yeah,
so
this is the future of your people.
To have more plaintiffs.
This is the future of your ancestors. This the next generations, where they're going to live. That's what you're talking about. If you have standing within this area that's affected by Lake Oahe's crossing, or you are going to be one of the people that has to live there in the future that inherits that land, you have standing. You can participate in this fight. You can stand up for your water. You can stand up for the people in a different way if you contact Revolution Truth. Have we shared all of the information?
Let me give you the email.
Yes, please.
Cindy, can I give you the plaintiffs? This mm-hmm. is for plaintiffs. If you would like to join this suit, and this is a class action suit, so we can have lots of plaintiffs on there.
Mm-hmm.
Not all of them, I don't think. Well, I don't know. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not exactly sure how all this works. But I don't think we have to fly everybody out there.
Sure.
Although, I don't know, I could be wrong about that. So, don't hold me to that. we'll see. Talk to Tangerine about that. Mm-hmm. So, the more plaintiffs we have, I think the better off we're going to be.
That's always
because
true
that's
for a class action.
A statement. And I believe there are 13 tribes in the affected area. So you don't just have to be Standing Rock or Cheyenne River. So if you're downriver of this Lake Oahe crossing along the Missouri River or any of its tributaries, please send us an email at info@revolutiontruth.org. info@revolutiontruth.org.
How about people that want to support your action? How about people that want to send their financial support so that you can pull this lawsuit off at the federal level?
Okay, so I think I sent a link to Duke. We have two ways to do this. We have a PayPal way and we have a GoFundMe way.
Okay.
And so the PayPal route is to go to our website, www.revolutiontruth.org. And there is a PayPal button there, sort of an orangish color off to the right.
Okay.
I think it's underneath a picture of Michael Moore, who's a dear friend of Tangerine. So anyway, look for his face. I think it's right around there.
I've seen it.
And then the second way is to go to our GoFundMe, and Duke has the link to that.
Okay.
I think it's dash standing dash rock.
Is it out of line for me to share that you guys are halfway to your fundraising effort and that this is going to fly? You guys need to get on board now because we're going to take off. It's going to fly. Is it okay to share that? Did I lose her?
Well, you just did. So, you know, here's where we're at, actually. So that 25K threshold that's on the fundraiser there,
mm-hmm.
we put that amount up there for an initial action.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to need to raise more than that to bring the EJ case.
Well, of course.
So we you know, this initial push is going to cover the
initial filings.
And it would cover, yeah, it'll cover the initial. Okay, so there are a couple of stages. So this is where we start to segue into what the case is about.
Sure.
Okay, so a lot of people this week, understandably, have been very upset about drilling down into our mother.
Yeah. You mean raping our mother? That's what you're talking about?
A rape. It's a rape.
The ongoing
rape.
It's a rape. Mm-hmm.
And it's profoundly offensive.
Mm-hmm.
And it's profoundly heartbreaking.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where we need a paradigm shift, but it's also where our spirituality runs up against the wall of the U.S. court system. This refusal of the court system to acknowledge and appreciate and respect the sanctity of this site and of our planet.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if we move over into what's hard-nosed and practical and what has the greatest chance of success, which is what we are after here, we need a win.
Yes.
We need a win.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to be smart about this. So, in the eyes of the court, raping our mother does not pose imminent or irreparable harm. What does pose a risk to irreparable harm is the oil flowing down the pipe. The court will see that it's the crude oil, the worst kind of oil that we could possibly transport through a pipeline. That is the thing that poses the greatest risk, and that's the thing the court might actually grant an injunction to stop.
And it is.
So from a strategic place, what we're doing is preparing. Because so we know, right, that they're saying, and we have to look at that with a squinty eye, because how many times have they given us a deadline that's way far out and it happens sooner than we expect?
Mm-hmm.
So keeping that pattern in mind, the oil company has said that it will be 60 days until they will start putting that oil down the line. And then it will take, I believe, 30 days for the oil to completely populate the line. So this first initial fundraising push is to get ready for filing that TRO, that emergency injunction, so that that oil does not come down, so it does not become the black snake. Right now, it's just a skin. When they fill it up with that poison, that's what we're going to stop with the TRO.
That's what we have to stop. I mean,
and I, yes, we do.
It literally sends chills down my spine. And I'm sick and saddened that the rape of our mother isn't enough. But I'm also filled with hope. Because you have a strategy. And you have an amazing research team, as I have had the privilege of learning from talking to you and other people on your team. I'm happy to share this with my audience because my audience is trying to kill this black snake. They want to know more about how they can be involved in the support of Standing Rock. They want to know how many different ways there are to cut off that head of the black snake. And this is just one of them. But it is an important and very well thought out strategic action. I wanted
so that's
to thank
just step
you.
One, though.
I wanted to thank you for the courage that it takes to do this in the face of everything that you guys are facing. Because I know that it is a huge battle that you guys are taking on for the stand for Standing Rock in the water there. It's a very courageous stand.
Well, this is the water. Period. All doubt ends there.
Yeah.
So I'm not fearful at all. I'm not afraid. I'm empowered.
That's right. That's
what
we need.
I'm
going to
do everything I can here because it is the right thing to do. I've been called to do it. We've all been called to do it. Everybody on this team.
That's right.
I just had a new conference. I had a conference call with this new influx of volunteers we just got who are fabulous. We just got to know each other today. And every single one of them was called to this work. Right here, right now. It's fascinating. It's wonderful and magical and divinely inspired.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really believe that's all of creation giving us the power to do this fearlessly.
Definitely. I agree.
And that's where I draw my strength from. I believe, Cindy, knowing you, that that's where you draw your strength from. And every single protector who has been out there, this is a movement of prayer. And when we pray, we connect.
That's
and
true.
Creation speaks back to us.
And we
and
find each other.
It, find each other, and when we're open to hearing it in every fiber of our being, there is no question about what action to take. All we have to do is open ourselves up to hearing it, and then it's all clear. It's just crystal clear, like the water should be.
Yeah, and I want to believe, I mean, I'm not just trying to pat you on the back for the work that your organization does, although it is amazing personally on a personal level. This action, the work that you guys are doing, it gives me hope in humanity. It restores my faith in the world that we're living in today. It's tough times that we're living in right now. And we're all looking for a way to do what's right. And we can take that action right now. We can get involved. And you guys are giving us a pathway to do that. So thank you so much for being with me.
Well, if I may speak to that.
Sure. Thank you.
Because there's this thought that comes in with this. I've been thinking about this a lot. As I've been on my little personal Facebook page, which isn't, you know, It's just been for friends and family and people I've met on Facebook over the years. And so I've been out there really working hard to tell people about this. And I've noticed that the interaction that I get from my friends and family is far less than posts that I might make about Trump. When I look at a comparison of the subject matter and what gets the greatest response, because the media has turned their attention away from Standing Rock, and because there has been a very deliberate and designed strategy that has been put into place to dismantle this movement, it's so clear. We can look at what has happened.
Yeah.
And there are numerous examples over a timeline. But we know that this corporate behemoth has extraordinary reach, and they have done everything they can from every possible angle to come in and dismantle this movement and get the attention of the public off.
Mm-hmm.
So that has worked in large part. Not for everybody. I know not for everybody.
Oh, no.
Because I know a lot of people who care.
We're not going nowhere.
But when I look at my own Facebook page and I see people not interacting with this, but boy, howdy, they will get out there and really go after Trump, and then they will say, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? Democracy is falling apart. Our voices are not being heard. The rule of law is not being followed. I know a lot of people don't care as much about that, but some people do. And it's about values and principles. And those all are different for each of us individuals. So I'd like to say to the folks who are worried about other things like Trump, like climate change, like finding better energy alternatives, because there are plenty of substitutes for oil, but there's no substitute for water. But still, coming back to these other larger societal issues, this case intersects with all of them.
It does.
All of them.
It does. It does. I mean, that's one of the most exciting things about this.
If people want to fight Trump, they need to pay attention to this suit, because Trump broke the law when he told the Army Corps to do this. What he did was absurd.
Yeah.
And we need to fight back, all of us.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And if we have a win here, that is a win in the fight against Trump.
Mm-hmm.
I'd also like to point out, if we do a little bit of math and rather than beautiful hopping birds on the ground, if we transmute ourselves for a moment, imagine that we're falcons or eagles looking down on that whole area. There are 20 million people downriver. Regardless of skin color, regardless of heritage, there are 20 million people who would be irreparably harmed if that oil were to get into that river. And it will, because all pipelines leak.
All of them.
It's not a question of if, it's a question of when. And if it were a big enough spill, there would be no way that they could ever clean it up. Now, 20 million people. If we look at the 2016 numbers of how many people live in the United States border, that is 6.3% of the population. The entire population of the United States would be impacted by a major spill at Lake Oahe.
It's like 10% of the population. That's crazy. That's insanity. Ugh. It makes my blood boil. It makes me
heartsick. If a big leak, I know, right? And if a big leak were to happen there and it got into the aquifers that are like 300 feet below the surface.
God help us.
Then those aquifers that supply all the water to several states, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not exactly sure, but I think I ran across that data in this engineering report that I read. Then that number goes up. And I haven't done the math yet, so I can't give anybody an estimate, but that's a lot of
people. It's catastrophic. Let me just tell you. I'm just going to preempt
and then
Rebecca's report.
Here
it's going to be awful.
Everybody across this nation who is fighting pipelines.
Yeah. Every single person. This definitely affects.
It would get into the ecosystem.
Every single person will be affected by this.
Yes.
Every
animal?
Single person. And by the way, the Midwest is the breadbasket of the world. And that's where they get the majority of their water from. The Oglala Aquifer. That's where that water comes from. That feeds the world. The world, as in the planet. I think it goes beyond saying this, but we're raised in a world where it's difficult to imagine that companies could be so irresponsible as to put the lives of billions of people in jeopardy or millions of people in jeopardy. But honestly, it happens every day. Pipelines leak, all of them. And North Dakota's regulatory bodies don't have a real great reputation for protecting the people of the state, nor does its government. I'm not going to have a discussion on tonight's show about all of the corruption, specifically of the state and law enforcement, but I think that all plays into this conversation because we're fighting against many different fronts here. So I wanted to give you an opportunity to share once more with our audience before we go off our live stream and our show tonight on A Mexican Crossing Lines with special guests, one of the plaintiffs, Russell Vasquez, and one of the people working in revolutiontruth.org, Rebecca Blackwell, who has been giving us all sorts of insight into the kind of work, the kind of research, the kind of legal tactics that are being brought forth by this hard-hitting organization, bringing us an alternative to fight against this black snake. What do you want to leave folks with? Parting words, information that they need to get a hold of?
Okay. May I make two more points before I give that information out?
Of course.
Because I think this is
of course.
A really good way to wrap this up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That engineer that I talked to who did the three-route comparison looked at all of it. And the only advantage to rerouting this pipeline onto these contested treaty lands was a $27.5 million cost savings.
Wow.
So all the things we just talked about, all the impacts we just talked about, the price tag they put on that is $27.5 million.
It was just cheaper.
We need to get these guys. So that's point number one. And the last thing I want to say here is that no matter what the outcome, exactly. No matter what the outcome of this case is, no matter how the judge rules,
this case because we're going to set a precedent here. Our lawyer, a very smart man, his name is Bruce Afram, is going to do something with the suit where he looks at all of the case law that has been established around all treaty rights. And what we have discovered is that in 1871, the Supreme Court ruled in a case that was in Georgia about land use rights that no U.S. governing body could control the land use rights for any treaties that were written prior to 1870. That it would take an act of Congress to change that. And that is something Congress has never done. And so all of these lands that have been taken from the native peoples,
whoa,
we will argue that the U.S. Army Corps never had the right to issue that permit in the first place.
Never.
Wow.
And win or lose, never. We expect to win, but should the outcome be different, this is how we win. At least one hugely important thing for every tribe in this beautiful land that we're all trying to save. It will go on court record, and any attorney who is fighting for treaty rights in the future will be able to reference our case as another basis point, another foundational point for future treaty rights cases. So we're going to go in there and we're going to set a precedent.
Yeah.
When we file this EJ suit. And yeah, that is a win.
Oh, yeah. No matter what, no matter what, you are laying the groundwork for a path. Like when you set up a pathway to a village or a camp, you're literally setting the road for future people that want to go down this legal avenue. Regardless of the outcome, the foundational work that you are laying out right now is necessary to give other people that opportunity. Man, this is so exciting. Wow. You heard it here.
I hope everyone will join us. We have to come together now.
Mm-hmm.
Together, we are great, you know. The sum is greater than its parts. You know, the together we have so much power. And it's our job as people to keep the authorities in check. It's our job to fight this, to fight the corporate Goliath. The United States government, Goliath, we are David, and together we will win.
Mm-hmm. And let me just make it clear for my audience. Revolution Truth has taken on other giants. And let me tell you something else. There's lots of ways to kill the black snake. Revolution Truth has come up with one of the ways, a revolutionary way. In a way that's always been there. It's always been a possibility. They're just seizing the opportunity, and I hope that you guys all do too. You've been listening to A Mexican Crossing Lines with Cindy Gomeshamp.
And Duke Gomeshamp.
On 88.1 FM, KPPPLP, Fargo Moorhead, where we are adding local color to your airwaves. We'll have links to how you can get a hold of revolutiontruth.org, how you can become a plaintiff in this case, or how you can support financially the effort to kill the black snake, one more in the many efforts out there at Standing Rock. And I'd like to remind people that this fight continues, this fight for water, and that Miniwichoni, water is life. Thank you. Have a good night, everybody.